Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 19.
So today we're diving into a real classic, Chapter 19 of Journey to the West. And honestly, even if you think you know the story, there's some surprisingly deep stuff in here.
That's so true. Chapter 19 actually has this dual title. Wukong subdues Pigsy in the Cloudstack Cave, and also Tripitaka receives the Heart Sutra at Flowing Mountain. Basically, how Zubaji, you probably know him as Pigsy, how he first shows up and gets, well, recruited for the journey.
Okay.
We'll look at his backstory, which is wild, his big fight with Sun Wukong, and, you know, how Tang Sanzang finally accepts him.
Got it. So the main players we need to keep in our heads are Sun Wukong, the Monkey King, obviously. Zubaji, the Pig Dummin, who apparently has quite the resume.
Huh. You could say that.
And Tang Sanzang, the monk leading the whole pilgrimage.
Perfect. So the chapter kicks off with a chase scene, actually. Wukong's chasing this pig demon. And this demon, he bolts back to his cave, Yunzhen Cave, the Cloudstack Cave.
Cloudstack Cave, right.
He doesn't just hide. He comes back out ready to fight, armed with, well, not a sword. He's got a nine-toothed rake.
A rake. Seriously. Okay, that's unexpected. Yeah. And Wukong just wants to know who this guy is.
Yeah, Wukong's like, who are you? And this is where it gets really interesting. The demon doesn't just say, I'm Bob. No, he gives this whole life story.
A whole way.
He reveals he wasn't always, you know, a pig monster. He used to be.
He starts by describing himself, says he was naturally clumsy, greedy, lazy, and never resting, which sounds exhausting, actually.
That last part, never resting, is ironic, isn't it, given the laziness. And he straight up says he wasn't into self-improvement or anything spiritual.
Yeah, never cultivated nature or truth. Muddled mind wasting days and months. So not exactly enlightened material initially.
Not at all. It really sets the stage. He's just existing. But then there's a turning point.
Right. He meets a true immortal.
Uh-huh. And this immortal basically warns him, says, you know, if you keep going like this, you're headed for some serious trouble. The eight difficulties and three evil paths. Laying out the consequences. But it works. Fear becomes the motivator.
It does. He says, hearing the words, intention turned to cultivation. He decides to reform, find a teacher, seek the wondrous methods.
And he really commits. The text mentions learning about the heavenly pass and the earthly gate.
What are those exactly? In, like, simple terms.
Think of them as key stages in internal cultivation. The heavenly pass is about connecting with higher energies, maybe. And the earthly gate is more about mastering your physical self, your base energies. He had to work on both.
Okay, got it. And then there's this nine-cycle great returning elixir. Sounds powerful.
It does. It's part of Taoist internal alchemy. He takes this elixir and practices nonstop, day and night, without stopping.
The text gets pretty metaphorical here, doesn't it?
Right.
Talking about circulating kidney water, the infant and maiden, lead and mercury.
Yeah, those are all code words for complex internal energy processes, like balancing yin and yang energies, refining vital essence, harmonizing different aspects of consciousness. It's very intricate.
But the result is profound. He achieves enlightenment, three flowers gathered at the crown, five energies returning to their origin.
Exactly. That signifies reaching a very high state of spiritual attainment, total mastery, basically.
And then, ascension. He flies up to heaven, gets welcomed by mortals, colored clouds at his feet. Pretty cool entrance.
Definitely. And he's not just in heaven. He gets a top job marshal overseeing the Heavenly River. Huge promotion from his lazy days.
It really shows what focus and, well, maybe that initial fear can do.
It shows transformation is possible.
Yeah.
But the story doesn't end there, does it?
No, it definitely doesn't.
Yeah.
This is where things take a turn. The Queen Mother's Peach Banquet.
Ah, the infamous party.
Right. He gets drunk. And suddenly, all that discipline, all that cultivation, it kind of goes out the window when he sees Changi, the moon fairy.
The text is quite blunt. His old mortal desires come flooding back. He completely forgets his status, his celestial manners.
Yeah, all Trudisi, no sense of rank. And it says he grabbed Changi, wanting her to stay with him.
It's a shocking moment. He barges into her palace, acting completely inappropriately. She tries to get away, but he's persistent, shouting like thunder.
Such a dramatic fall. From disciplined immortal to, well, a drunken harasser?
It really underscores that tension, doesn't it, between the achieved celestial state and the perhaps more fundamental nature underneath. The alcohol just stripped away the cultivated layer. Anyway, his behavior gets reported.
To the Jade Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
And the punishment is initially death, right?
Yes, but Tai Bai Jingxing, Venus, steps in and pleads for him. So the sentence is reduced.
Reduced, but still brutal. 2,000 hammer blows, Flesh split open, skin broken, bones about to break. Ouch.
And then banishment from heaven. He's kicked out.
And that's how he ends up reincarnated, but wrongly, as he says, as a pig demon, Zugangli.
Exactly. I, due to sin, wrongly reincarnated. It's quite the journey down. And knowing his past identity really throws the demon off balance. It sort of sets up their big fight.
Right, the main event. Monkey King's staff versus the celestial rake.
Yeah, Wukong's golden hoop staff against this nine-toothed rake. And the fight is described as, you know, really intense, sparks flying, wind howling. They seem pretty evenly matched at first.
Evenly matched. Even with Wukong's power, that rake must be something special then.
Oh, it absolutely is. And Pig Zizibaji, he is so proud of this rake. He goes on this whole monologue about it.
He does. Tell me more. What's the deal with the rake?
Okay, so according to him, it's called the Shangbao Kinjinpa, the superior treasure-soaked gold rake.
Fancy name.
Right. He claims it was forged personally by Lao Jun.
Lao Jun, like the ultimate Taoist deity.
The very one. Using divine ice iron, with help from Yingwell, the spirit of Mars, then the five emperors and the six Dings and six Jaya's major celestial powers, they all chipped in.
Wow. All-star blacksmithing team.
Totally. It's got nine jade teeth, gold rings, it embodies cosmic principles, the constellations, the seasons, yin and yang, sun and moon. It was supposedly made for the Jade Emperor himself, who then gave it to him, Marshal Tianpeng, as his weapon of office.
Okay, that's not just a rake. That's a serious piece of divine hardware. No wonder he's proud. It's his link to his glory days.
Exactly. It symbolizes everything he lost. But even with this amazing weapon, the first fight with Wukong ends in a draw. They fight all night. Dawn comes, and Pigsy basically gets tired and runs back into his cave, slams the door shut.
So stalemate. Wukong goes back to the monk and the Gao family.
Yep. And old Mr. Gao is freaking out. He begs Wukong, please just get rid of him permanently. I'll pay you anything. He's terrified, worried about the family name, you know.
Understandable. Having a pig demon son-in-law isn't great for social standing.
And not really. And Wukong, funny enough, he almost defends Pigsy a bit at first. Points out, well, he did make you rich.
Huh. Wukong the pragmatist. But the monk, Tang Sanzang, he's not having that right.
No, Tang Sanzang is clear. This needs to be sorted out properly. He tells Wukong to go back and finish the job. Deal with the demon.
Okay, round two. Wukong goes back to Cloudstack Cave.
And he doesn't knock politely this time. He smashes the doors down, starts yelling insults, really trying to provoke Pigsy.
And does it work?
Oh, yeah. Pigsy comes out, furious again, yelling about property damage. It's kind of funny, his indignation.
He's worried about his door.
Apparently. And Wukong just mocks him, makes fun of his amazing rake. Like, what do you do with that thing, Plowfields?
Ouch. Hitting him where it hurts his rake pride?
Totally. And Wukong does something really bold. He basically dares Pigsy. He says, go on, take your best shot. Hit my head with that fancy rake of yours.
Seriously? He offers his head.
Yep. And he lists off all the stuff he survived in heaven, being chopped, hammered, burned in Lao Jun's furnace, lightning strikes, everything. Says he's got a copper head and iron arms, basically indestructible.
That's some serious confidence. A mic drop moment, almost.
It really is. And Pigsy, maybe thinking Wukong's bluffing or maybe just enraged, he takes the swing,
right.
Clang. The rake hits Wukong's head and does absolutely nothing. Maybe a tiny scratch, maybe just makes his head itch.
Whoa, okay, that must have shocked Pigsy. His super weapon is useless.
Completely stunned him. Seeing his divine rake bounce off Wukong's head, that changes everything. It's a total power demonstration.
And then Wukong tells him why he's really there.
Exactly. Wukong reveals, look, I'm here protecting the Tang monk on his journey to get scriptures.
The magic words.
Seems like it. The moment Pigsy hears scripture seeker, his whole attitude flips. He drops the rake, bows, and says, wait, that's who you're with?
Uh-huh.
He explains that Guanyin Bodhisattva told him to wait here, be vegetarian, keep the precepts, and wait for the scripture seeker to arrive so he could join the pilgrimage and atone for his sins.
How convenient. Oh, that scripture seeker. Why didn't you say so before you smashed my door and let me whack you with a rake?
Huh. Yeah, Wukong is definitely skeptical. He makes Pigsy swear an oath that he's being sincere.
Smart move.
And Pigsy does. He vows he's serious. Then Wukong tells him, okay, prove it. Burn down this cave. Leave your past behind.
Burn his own house down.
Yep. Symbolism. And Pigsy does it. Just sets the whole place on fire.
Wow. Okay, he seems committed now. Or at least he knows which side his bread is buttered on.
Probably a bit of both. So he gives the rake to Wukong for safekeeping.
Wukong gets the rake.
Temporarily, yeah. And Wukong uses a spell to kind of bind Pigsy, just in case. little insurance policy.
But you're too careful.
Then they head back to Gal Village. The family, thrilled, overjoyed, problem solved.
Big relief all around.
Pigsy then formally meets Tang Sanzang, explains the whole Guanyin situation. The monk is pleased, accepts him as a disciple.
Another one for the team. Does he get a Buddhist name?
He does. Wuneng, meaning awaken to ability, which nicely complements Wukong's name. Wukong, awaken to emptiness, kind of establishes them as like spiritual brothers.
Wuneng, okay. But isn't he usually called Baji? Where does that come from?
Yes. So Pigsy, having been vegetarian for ages waiting for the monk, immediately asks, okay, master, can I eat properly now?
He's hungry.
He's starving.
Yeah.
But Tang Sanzang says, nope, you need to keep observing the rules, and gives him the additional name Baji, meaning eight precepts, as a constant reminder of the discipline required.
The eight precepts. So no feasts for him.
Pretty much. But Pigsy accepts the name happily. He's Zhu Baji now.
And the Gals throw a feast. A vegetarian one, presumably.
A lot of vegetarian feast, yes. Though Pigsy apparently tries to get his former wife involved, and Wukong has to shut that down quickly. Like, dude, we're leaving.
Right. Got to keep focused on the mission.
Exactly. Tang Sanzang on the horse, Wukong leading.
Well, Zhu Baji gets stuck carrying the luggage.
Huh. From heavenly marshal to pig demon to baggage handler, quite the journey already. It really is. And that's just his introduction. You see his fall, the whole story with the rake, that clash with Wukong, and then this kind of reluctant, maybe slightly self-serving joining of the quest because Guanyin said so.
A great mix of action. His personality definitely brings some humor. But there are those deeper themes too, right? Redemption, fate.
Absolutely. It's all woven together.
There's a new character involved.
Yes. A really fascinating one. The Wukao Zen Master. Wukao means like crow's nest. He's this figure of quiet wisdom they meet on Futu Mountain.
Futu Mountain. That's after they pass through Wuxi, Tibet.
That's the one. And the text paints this picture of just remarkable peace, almost unnatural harmony, actually.
It sounds amazing. Like green pines, cypresses, willows, peach blossoms.
Birds singing, cranes flying, fragrant flowers, lush grass, flowing streams. The works. Auspicious clouds, even. It's like stepping into, well, a sanctuary.
Yeah, a perfect paradise. And there's something unusual about the animals, too.
That's what really stands out. You've got deer offering flowers, monkeys presenting fruit, bluebirds and phoenixes singing together.
Wow.
Black cranes, golden pheasants. They're all just gathered peacefully. It screams, this place is special.
Okay, so it sets a very distinct scene. Then Zhu Baji just throws in a curveball.
He does. He mentions almost casually that he's actually met this Wukao Zen master before. Mm. Yeah. And he even says the Zen master invited him to stay and practice there with him.
That's fascinating. Mm. It makes you think about Baji's past, doesn't it? And maybe his potential.
It definitely adds layers to his character. So Tang Sanzang, always polite, asks about the Zen master.
And Baji's a bit cagey about it.
A little bit. He says something like, oh, he has some Taoist practices, and mentions he turned down the offer to stay. It hints at a past we're only just sort of glimpsing.
And then they find the Zen master. Where is he?
In this really unique dwelling, a simple nest made of firewood, perched high up in a fragrant cassia tree. Hence the name Wukao, crow's nest.
Okay, so not your typical monastery. What's the greeting like?
It's quite revealing. The Zen master seems surprised to see Zhu Baji with the monk, and he specifically calls him out, references his past as the pig demon of Fuling Mountain.
Ooh, so he knows things.
Clearly. He has some insight into their pasts, definitely.
Is he judging Baji for it?
Mm-hmm. Not at all, actually. That's what's important. His surprise isn't negative. He actually says something positive about Baji now following a path of good.
That's a nice touch. A message about redemption, maybe.
Exactly. The possibility of change, no matter your past. It's subtle, but it's there.
And Sun Wukong, he's not going to stay quiet, is he?
Huh. Never. When the Zen master asks Tang Sanzang who Wukong is, Wukong can't resist jumping in.
What does he say?
Something playful, like, hey, how come you recognize old Pigsy here, but not me? Classic Wukong. Bit of cheekiness, maybe a touch of wanting to be acknowledged too.
Sounds about right. How does the Zen master react?
He just calmly says he hasn't encountered Wukong much before. Then Tang Sanzang formally introduces his formidable disciple.
So introduction's done. Then they get down to business, the journey itself.
Precisely. Tang Sanzang, always focused on the goal, asks about the distance to the Great Thunderclap Temple in the west.
And the answer isn't exactly encouraging, I gather.
No, it's pretty stark. The Zen master says, "Far, far, the road is long and tigers and leopards are hard to travel." A blunt assessment of the physical dangers.
Just what they wanted to hear.
Well, yeah. But then he immediately pivots. He says the real challenge isn't just the terrain or the beasts. It's the demonic obstacles.
Demonic obstacles. Mozang. What did that mean exactly?
Think of it less as literal demons, though, maybe some of those too, but more like internal stuff. Doubts, fears, confusion, attachments. The things that can really trip you up on any big undertaking.
Okay. The inner struggles. Makes sense.
And that's where the Zen master offers a remedy. He gives Tang Sun Zhang the Heart Sutra.
The Heart Sutra. Right. That's a huge deal in Buddhism. And he just gives it to him.
Just like that. Presents it as the antidote to these Mozang. And what's amazing is how incredibly concise it is.
How short are we talking?
The text is 54 sentences, 270 characters. Tiny, but packed with meaning.
Wow. So profound wisdom doesn't need to be long-winded.
Apparently not. And Tang San Zhang, because he has these inherent roots, the text mentions, basically his natural spiritual aptitude.
He gets it immediately.
Memorizes the whole thing right there on the spot, instantly.
Yeah.
Which shows you how ready he was for this teaching.
And this sutra is still around today, is that?
Oh, yeah. The text explicitly says it is still transmitted to this day and calls it the general scripture of cultivation and the gateway to Buddhahood. That really flags its importance.
So what's the core message? You mentioned emptiness, Kong.
That's the heart of it, yeah. One of the key lines goes something like, form does not differ from emptiness, and emptiness does not differ from form. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form.
Okay. Unpack that a little. It sounds kind of abstract.
Well, think of it like this. Mm. The things we see as solid, real, separate objects form, they don't actually have this fixed independent existence we assume they do. Their true nature is empty of that.
Empty meaning.
Yeah.
Non-existent.
Not exactly nothingness. More like empty of a permanent, unchanging self. Everything is interconnected, constantly changing. Like a wave in the ocean. Mm. Is the wave separate from the water?
No, it's just the water moving in a certain way.
Exactly. So the wave has form, but its fundamental nature is empty of being a separate thing from the water. It's still water.
Okay, I think I'm getting it. It's about seeing past the surface appearance to the underlying reality.
You got it. And the sutra then lists all these things that in this ultimate reality of emptiness don't exist as fixed categories. No form, no sensation, perception, volition, consciousness, no eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind. It's a long list.
Sounds like he's dismantling everything we think is real.
Kind of. He's dismantling our conceptual framework. No suffering, origination, cessation, path, no knowledge, and also no attainment. These are all concepts we use, but in emptiness, they aren't absolute barriers or goals.
No attainment. This seems counterintuitive for a spiritual path. Don't you want to attain enlightenment?
Ah, but see, the sutra says, because there is nothing to be attained, bodhisattvas relying on prajnaparamita, that's the perfection of wisdom, have no obstruction in their minds.
So letting go of the striving is the path.
In a way, yes. When your mind isn't obstructed by wanting to grasp or attain something, you have no fear, you're far beyond deluded views, and you reach, finally, nirvana. Freedom comes from letting go of those attachments.
Right. It's about the wisdom itself, the prajnaparamita.
Exactly. And that wisdom is described as this incredibly powerful thing. A great divine mantra, a great bright mantra, a supreme mantra, an unequaled mantra, which can eliminate all suffering and is true and not false. It's like the ultimate tool.
And it ends with the mantra itself.
Yes. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisattva.
Which means?
Often translated along the lines of gone, gone, gone beyond, utterly gone beyond, enlightenment, hail. Like an affirmation of that whole process of liberation.
Wow. Okay. So Tang San Zhang gets this incredibly profound teaching, this powerful mental tool. Seems like he's set, right?
You'd think so. But then he tries to get back to practicalities. He asks again, okay, but what's the actual route? Where do we go?
And the Zen master's answer changes tack completely.
Oh, yeah. It gets really, really cryptic, way less straightforward. He says something like, the road is not difficult to travel. Listen to my instructions.
Okay. Sounds promising.
About thousands of mountains and rivers deep, many miasmas and demonic places. So still emphasizing the difficulty, but in a very general, almost poetic way.
Right. Not exactly turn-by-turn directions.
Not at all. Then he starts listing these specific-sounding but clearly symbolic landmarks and dangers.
Like what?
Things like reaching Connecting Heaven Cliff and needing not to be afraid, or having to walk sideways at Rubbing Ear Cliff.
Connecting Heaven Cliff sounds like a major challenge. rubbing ear cliff, maybe needing to listen carefully or be humble.
That's a good way to think about it. It's symbolic language. Yeah. Then he warns about the Black Pine Forest, where Yowhoo, fox spirits, or demons intercept travelers.
So deception, temptation maybe,
yeah.
Things that lead you off the path.
Very likely. It's all metaphorical guidance about the types of trials they'll face, not literal geography.
And it keeps going. More metaphors.
Oh, yes. Kingdoms full of jingling spirits or elves and mountains run by Mozu demon lords. It's a landscape of spiritual and psychological challenges.
It uses animal imagery too, right?
Yeah, really striking stuff. Tigers in the Chin Hall, a place associated with culture, which sounds like brute force corrupting something refined. Wolves acting as registrars, maybe representing bureaucratic hurdles or judgments.
Lions and elephants claiming kingship.
Right, symbolizing power struggles, maybe arrogance. Tigers and leopards as imperial guards, constant threats, perhaps. It's a whole allegorical zoo of dangers.
Right, and there are ones that seem quite specific to the pilgrims.
Exactly. He mentions wild boars carrying burdens, which is hard not to connect to Zubaji.
Carrying his own baggage. Literally and figuratively.
Could be. And encountering Shui Guai, water monsters again, possibly hinting at future trials for Baji or maybe Xia Wujing later. And then the big one.
Let me guess. Something about a monkey.
Spot on. He mentions, very pointedly, an old stone monkey of many years harboring resentment.
Ouch. That's aimed right at Wukong, isn't it? His rebellious past.
It certainly seems that way. It's a direct poke.
So, after all this, poetry and potential insults. Does he give any final practical advice?
Sort of. His very last instruction is basically, ask someone you know who actually knows the way west.
Huh. That's anticlimactic.
Yeah.
Or maybe suggesting help comes from elsewhere.
It's intriguing, isn't it? Maybe saying rely on experience or connections made along the journey. But Wukong isn't thinking about that. He's furious.
Because of the monkey comment. And the pig comment.
Absolutely. He takes wild boar carrying burdens as a direct insult to Baji and the old stone monkey line as a major jab at himself. He completely loses it.
Typical Wukong reaction. How does Baji take it?
Aji's reaction is quite different, actually. More thoughtful. He kind of acknowledges that, well, the Zen master might know things past and future. He seems more interested in the prediction about water monsters than offended.
Interesting contrast. Shows their different personalities, I guess.
Definitely. Baji seems more accepting, maybe more aware of his own flaws, while Wukong's pride is easily wounded.
So Wukong's angry, Baji's thoughtful. What happens next? Does the Zen master stick around?
Nope. He just ascends in this flash of golden light, straight back up to his crow's nest. Very mystical exit.
And Wukong tries to.
What?
Follow him, attack him.
Attack the nest. In his rage, he tries to smash it with his iron staff.
Does it work? Can his power break through?
Not a chance. The nest is protected. Layers of lotus flowers appear. Auspicious mist. His incredible strength is totally useless against it.
Wow. So physical power versus spiritual attainment.
Exactly. It's a clear visual metaphor. Wukong's brute force can't touch the Zen master's enlightened state or his dwelling place.
And Tang Sanzang sees this. What does he say?
He rightly scolds Wukong. Tells him off for trying to attack a bodhisattva, someone clearly spiritually advanced.
Does Wukong listen?
Not really. He's still convinced they were insulted. But despite the lingering anger and confusion, they have no choice but to continue westward.
And the chapter ends by saying this encounter means more trouble ahead.
Yeah. The narrator notes that the tribulations are only going to increase from here on out. This meeting, while giving them wisdom, also seems to foreshadow greater challenges.